Okay. So, yeah, so I'll just recap real quick kind of where we were and some of the really key highlights, and then we'll pick up from there. So, again, we just kind of introduced it. We said what we know for sure is it's a burial cloth that is currently held at a Catholic chapel in Turin. It's purported to be the burial cloth of Christ. We kind of said, hey, some of the things about it that are important to know is that the actual image of the man that appears in photos and the negative and just even with the naked eye, that no paint or dye or powder, no kind of artistic chemical thing made that up. No chemical reaction made the image of, you know, hundreds of layers of microfibers. It's only on the top layer or two. It's less than 1% of the thread that this image is actually on. And that the original image is a, like, it's not a multi-blended fabric. It's a true linen. You know, we even talked about the type of weave that it was and stuff. We said there are traces of other things on it, but that ultimately those things aren't what make up the image. It's just other things that are on it. We looked at some of the images, the true naked eye image, the original negative that was back from 1898 from the Italian fella. We looked at like this blood density image. We looked at this UV1, the VP8 image. We looked at some of these other density relief 3D scans. Then we kind of talked some about the history of it and some of these early like knowing its consistent history that we have of this actual true thing. We looked back at some of the earlier tradition of things that people kind of connect to the early history of the shroud before it really is being called this, and we know for sure that it's the same thing and all of that. So we kind of looked at some of that early history and early tradition, and then we kind of looked at the true, like, what we've got since for sure, this unbroken line since the 14th century that we've got on this thing. And so when we were looking at that, we said it's been in some fires, even one recently. We said that it kind of got taken to Italy in the 16th century. We said that first negative photo that we looked at was in 1898. That was kind of really the beginning of like the scientific analysis of this. The first big round of testing was all non-destructive stuff, mostly like UV and different light kind of photographing and things like that, trying to do analysis to figure out, you know, if it could be replicated and what exactly it was. That was all done in 1978. In 1988 was the carbon-14 dating testing that happened. We said that there's been other testing and stuff, but these were kind of some of the big highlight ones, some of the big things of note, that there's been other stuff that's kind of gone in and done other non-invasive testing or try to duplicate things like that. There was a big restoration done in 02, and it was kind of a debated thing. And recently there's been some blood and also wide angle x-ray scanning testing done, which is a kind of a data analysis. And we'll get into the testing stuff more today. But yeah, so just that there's been some more very recent big testing that's done, and it's provided some new evidence around this. I had not yet. We will talk about that more. Yeah, no worries. We talked a little bit about this other rag that we have that goes back even further in its unbroken line of history that we've got on it. This is kind of purported to be like the face cloth of Christ there right after his death, covering up his face. We kind of looked at some of the, you know, like pointed out in scripture how John talks about multiple cloths in his gospel, that all of them do talk about a cloth in his burial, but John talks about multiple cloths and the way that it was, that this sudarium all matches up. We had talked about how the sudarium has, you know, the blood that was on it was, we hadn't really talked, we won't talk more about its testing too much other than maybe one note. So just to kind of, we did mention here with its testing that the blood on it is consistent with someone who was like asphyxiated and had, you know, liquid in their lungs, which would be consistent with someone who was crucified. And then we kind of opened up our conversation about like points of comparison, how you can find all these little things where they mash up in a line. And if you have over 40, that even modern policing forensics would say, well, that's an identical match of an image. And that the sudarium had 70 on the front and 40 on the back. then that kind of also led us into the art and all of these points of comparison in art and how the kind of the history of the image of Jesus was really shaped. And we can see this consistent thread in the images, and these images also share a whole lot of resemblance with the shroud. And so there's some things that we could kind of point out there with that as well, that, hey, you know, like, well, if this is truly the image of this man, then it would make sense that either it potentially influenced these images itself, or that other things that were truly pointing to his, you know, kind of his general resemblance that you would see in art, that it's just the true image. And so, yeah, it makes sense that it's aligned because, well, it's the actual image of the guy. If you took a picture of me, someone doesn't have to see that picture of me to get a good description of me and paint an accurate picture. And then those other ones that they drew and the picture of me that they didn't see would still look alike because they're getting an accurate description of me. And that's what they're trying to portray. So that's kind of where I had us stopping the last time. So now we'll kind of pick up here and look at some of the testing that's been done, some of the more scientific kind of stuff that's been done recently, and then also kind of look at the end at some of the, I think, just three of the most rational criticisms as far as like, well, why is this not? And then kind of at the end, draw some conclusions and hopefully be able to circle back to anything you want to as well. So with that in mind, here's what medical professionals have had to say about the man on the image. He's clearly in rigor mortis, so his body's kind of frozen in a particular way. You can overlay his legs. His wrists are kind of like this. So he's kind of positioned like this. You can kind of see how his feet lock in like they would have been potentially on a cross. You can see how those wounds overlay. The stain is consistent with the wounds that are described in the four Gospels. So there's a piercing over here on the left side, over by the lung and heart area. There's consistency as far as, like I said, with the wrist and with the feet and the overlapping there. We looked at the wounds around the top of the head. We looked at the beating on the chest and the back, kind of seeing here on this slide that there was somewhere between 100 to 150 lashing marks on his front and back. You know, when you look at this, the rag as well, like we said, that it's not the image itself that's blood, but there is blood on it. And that blood is consistent with like post-mortem bleeding. So that rag wasn't on this person before it wasn't on him and then he started bleeding. His body was done living and the little bit of blood that was around it, you know, trying to be as polite as I can be, but the little bit of blood that was around it kind of, you know, leaked. For as best as I can say it politely there. But again, yeah, just consistent with that it came on after his death. It's also consistent that on the back, where the back wounds were, that before his death, that there was a lot of heavy weight centralized in a specific area. You can tell the way that the blood is pooled and the bruising is pooled, that he would have had a very heavy weight on his middle and upper back. You can also see in the blood, just like doing testing of the blood, that the blood itself is consistent with someone who had a lot of heavy wounds before their death. So like all of the lashing marks that we see, that wasn't done as like beating a dead body. That was a living person who was beaten and then later died. And the blood, like the way that you have these things happen to you and the way that your blood reacts just chemically, it's consistent with someone who had that happen. A comparison would be a torture victim, forensically. And just kind of the last thing, I suppose, and this will kind of circle back to a little bit with the blood as well, but the chest wound is consistent with a blood-water mix. You can see that it's both. So like we talked about with the sudarium, that there is this consistency of like, you can see where there's sweat and blood. In here, you can see where there's both water and blood kind of pooled together. So when they're doing the testing of the lab testing, as far as date stuff goes, the big one up to the last couple years had been the carbon-14 testing. So like the first round of testing in 78, they could they could give you like a, oh, well, just based on what we know that it's not, we could tell you it's probably this old, but they couldn't give any kind of actual confirmative test because there was nothing that they were doing that would do that. Then they do the carbon-14 test, and that was in 88. And so the original carbon-14 test comes back and says, hey, this thing is from the late 13th, maybe the early 14th century, because they can kind of give you a range of years. Late 13th, early 14th century would be saying like the end of the 1200s and the beginning of the 1300s. And it's kind of in that range there. So that's what they come back and say. And so everybody more or less says, okay, well, great. Like, then that's that. That, you know, the carbon-14 test was done and it says that it's a fake. And so it's a fake, you know. And that's where I think a lot of the world kind of resided for the majority of the last near 40 years or so. So just some things to note about this, though, as far as the original date testing goes. So the British Museum in London oversees the entirety of the testing. They like pick who's doing it. They collect the results. They publish it. It has since been 100% confirmed that they just did not release all of the data. There's plenty of data in the original testing that would go to say that they pulled fabric that's, what's a good way to say it? It's like multiple fabrics together. It wasn't a singular fabric. And we know that the original thing was all linen, which would go to say that part of what they had, part of what they're testing, is not an original thing. It's something that has later come on and been added to it. There's also part of the data in there that shows that they didn't actually have a consistent date amongst them. They had a wide variety of dates because, again, they all had one piece of, so they took one small piece of fabric and then they cut that up into three pieces. And everybody tested this one small piece of fabric, as opposed to taking a little piece from over here and a little piece from over here and a little piece from over here. They take one slightly larger square and then split that up into three. And that's what they test. And again, like we said, the data shows that it's not a consistent, singular, all linen thing. This is a non-homogeneous thing. And that they're testing. So, of course, people's results come back all over the place because they're not testing one consistent thing and they're testing it from this, you know, whatever was on it. We don't know for sure. It's pretty sure it's just a patch because it's right by one of the fire spots that they take it from. But we don't know that for sure that it was a patch. It could have been some other kind of spill or stain or anything. It could have been soot from the original fire that it was in. Who knows? Point being, all of this data doesn't get published. They just publish, hey, well, we averaged the dates together and we got this. They don't even say that. They don't say we averaged it. That's what they did. They just averaged the dates together and then they published that date. And they didn't, like I said, release all of this information until somebody was trying to do research on this and ended up doing Freedom of Information Act request. Because a lot of the testing, though it was like all got together by the British Museum, a lot of the testing was done through the Air Force Academy and people who worked there. And so U.S. laws come into play a little bit and they're able to do request acts on this and they get all the information and then all this data comes out. So it's pretty fair to say that certainly not everybody involved, but it's certainly fair to say at least some people involved were in at least a regard acting in bad faith here. That they had some, I won't try to prescribe their motives to them. I don't know them and I'm not a mind reader, but there's some level of ulterior motive why they choose to not withhold all of this, or they choose to withhold some of this information, not divulge all of the information, and why they choose to, it's not exactly like they broke, testing etiquette, but they just didn't do the thing that would provide the best results as far as taking from different places and things like that, making sure that you had singular fabric, and that's just not what they did. Since then, the team that did that testing in 1988 split, and by that, it's most people think that, yeah, we probably don't have the right date. They don't all think that it means it's real, but some of them might say, well, actually, maybe it's more like a 7th or 8th century thing. I don't know. I just don't think that our test that we did is correct or proper. There's still some people that were on that original team, though they're in a pretty small minority, that will just hold to, well, nope, that we did the test, and this is the date, and sorry, that's the date. Since then, though, like I said, we've done this. It was WACS, or the wide angle X-ray scattering test. And we've just done that here in the last couple of years. And the way that that works is they're essentially testing the aging of the fabric. So we know how long this kind of fabric, like what it should look like at certain lengths of time. So we're going to test to see like how old this fabric has aged. Now, it's not an exact perfect thing, because there are like, okay, well, you could have different elemental factors that would alter the aging of a thing. If you leave out a piece of leather in the rain and the sun, it's going to age differently than if you kept a piece of leather inside and you took proper care of it. So they account for that. But the last point that's on the slide here is it says, if the thing is only 700 years old, so if it's only as old as the carbon 14 date test says it is, then the piece of fabric would need to have been kept in the driest, hottest, like it would need to have been kept in the middle of the Sahara Desert openly and not moved for that 700 years. And we know where it's been for 700 years. It's been kept in a chapel in France and Italy. It's been in a couple fires, and we know that. We understand how that can affect it. It also tests differently around the areas that are still most impacted by the burn spots and not. So like we can see the impact of the fire. We know this isn't all fire. For this to have been the case, like for this wide angle scattering test to have the results that it's had, which is said it's from the first or second century, well, then for that to be the case, like I said, it would need to have been kept out. Well, I'm sorry, I apologize. It comes back and says it's from the first or second century, is what the wide angle testing says. That would be aligned with how we understand it, that it's been kept in chapels and it's been kept and kind of, you know, brought out once a year to be paraded on Good Friday. And then it's been kept inside of this chapel in Italy for the last 700 years. That's how we understand it. And that would align with the wide angle scattering, for it to say it's from the first or second century. For it to only be 700 years old, that's where, and have this wide angle scattering test say it's from the first or second century, that's where it would need to have been kept out in the hottest, driest possible place. It needs to be out in Death Valley the whole time. Yeah, just like building fires. Yeah, it wasn't ever somebody like coming in to like destroy it. It just was like building caught on fire, you know, candle was too close to it, and it, that type of thing. So anyways, yeah, to that point, just the date testing has really been brought into question recently. This wide angle would say it's to the first or second century, and it's not that it is impossible using that method. Like we said, there are things that could affect it. You could have it be only 700 years old and age like that. It's just we know where it's been the last 700 years, and it hasn't been in the environment for it to have aged like that. And so that's where you can kind of call it into question. There has not been, like, since the past carbon 14 date has kind of been more or less agreed that, you know, by both the people who want this and believe this to be real, and the people who don't believe that this is truly the burial cloth of Christ, like either way, both sides kind of are at the point now where they would agree and say, however old it is, that 88 test wasn't a good test. But everybody kind of agrees on that statement. However old it is, the 88 test wasn't a good test. We should probably retest it. But no one has gotten together a team to retest it, and the church hasn't authorized any retesting. And so at this point, the most recent dating stuff done is the wide angle. There's also been the Italian team here recently that's been doing some of this blood work analysis on it. And so that's where we already talked about some of this. We know the bleeding was post-mortem on the shroud, not on the sudarium. On that, there's a mix of it. The congealing on the back, like we mentioned, the enzymes in the blood being consistent with like a torture victim, someone who had suffered a lot of trauma physically. They can also tell the directionality of the blood flow, so they can like see how the blood was kind of like running down the body as if it was upright at first. And so they can just kind of track that sort of stuff. They can test the blood, and to the extent that they can know that it's like AB human blood, but they can't you could take my mouth swab and then you could take my dad's mouth swab and you could do a DNA test and confirm we're parents. But since we don't have something to test it to, you can't do anything with it in that sense.
So what does the AB mean?
Like what blood type?
I'm O positive.
Right. So there's A, B, O. You can be AB. That's
what does the AB mean? Does it
It's just B. Yeah, it's just that blood type.
Okay.
It's just
because that's what my family is, except for me and my father.
Yeah, it's not. It's just that it's A. There's A positive negative, B positive negative, O positive negative, and AB positive negative.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just the type that it is. And it also matches the type on the cesarean. They're both AB. So this recent team has been doing, let's see, do I have anything else on here? No. So this team's been doing a lot of tests with the blood work. To be honest, I read it, but plenty of it goes over my head. I am not a scientist on blood, and they are doctors of blood. And so they wrote a report to be read and studied by other people who are doctors and other graduate degree holders on blood. So plenty of it, but I also then reading enough other like doctors who then read it and wrote their summaries, understood enough to understand generally what they were getting at. I say that to say, if you feel like you have a better understanding of the Italian team's blood testing, it's out there to read. Not me. I had to read some summaries to better understand what they were getting at for a lot of it, because it is just, it's graduate level jargon that I don't understand. So they do those testings, the blood testings, and then there's also been image testings. We've looked at some of those, the VP8, which was the VP8, which was the earliest image testing done. Some of these other 3D scans, like I keep wanting to call them like topography maps, but I think it's density relief is what you'd be talking about in an image like this. But they're able to get a sense of what this looked like when you extrapolated off the image. And again, we just kind of pointed out that it's interesting that, you know, we kind of understand how it's laying over a person. It's not all perfect two dimension, like it's laying in contrast, and so you can kind of see that depth to it, and yet the image is on it in the way that it is and not skewed. So how does that get made? It's curious. The fabric does show testing back to the Levant. Part of that testing that was done recently was also testing like, hey, where does the fabric come from? We can tell the different types of like, okay, if you got the linen from here, it's going to have this characteristics. And if you got the linen from here, it's going to have this characteristics. So you can generally tell, oh, this came from somewhere around like, you know, China, Korea, somewhere over in Asia. Or, oh, this came somewhere from the Middle East. Or, oh, this came somewhere from the Mediterranean or Northern Europe. Or, you can't be specific. You couldn't, like, actually, sometimes you can, depending on the kind of testing you're doing and what results you have to back it against. But it's something like this where we don't have results to back it against. You can only get as specific as about, you know, the general region of the world. Today, where we have results to say, oh, well, we know exactly what kind of flowers grow where. You know, you could be walking around somewhere and pick up a seed on your shoe and they could test that and be like, oh, you were walking on Cumberland Avenue because that's the only place that those flowers are in town. Levant is like the Middle East, like Jerusalem, Israel, Jordan, that area. That's the Levant. So that's where it draws back to. It comes from the Middle East. Like nobody made it in Europe with European fabric. They made it with, well, maybe they made it in Europe, but they did it with fabric from the Middle East. So I'll just read the Dr. Meacham is the one who was doing this testing, and I'll read this quote here, it's just a quote from the article. It says, Dr. William Meacham was able to secure 5 threads to test. He then gathered samples of linen and flax from areas around Europe and the Middle East, as well as historical samples from various periods of Egypt, Roman Israel, and 20th century Europe. The results of the test showed the expected regional groupings for the samples gathered from Egypt, Europe, and Israel, but the shroud samples, which exhibited virtually identical results, fell within the Israel grouping. So they're able to trace it back to other, like it matches other linen from that area at that time, is what we're getting at. So that's who William Meacham was there. So the kind of predominant theory, there's one of the testing that was done with this, attempted forgeries, like someone trying to see if they could duplicate it. Like, oh, well, you know, so in a sense, it's a test, right? Like, they're not testing the fabric itself, but they're trying to do a test to see if they could duplicate it. And so in that, one way that they found, okay, well, we can't make the fabric seem as old as it is, but we can make the image on the shroud appear in the same way, and we can make it have its, like, you know, image testing results all the same. They did that through, like, radiation level UV lights. And so they were able to make it duplicate. Again, I'll just flip to the slide for a second. Zero times has someone passed a test, both of being able to have the fabric match and have the image do all of the image testing stuff match. So you could go and find a, you know, 2,000-year-old piece of fabric, and you could paint on an image, and we'd say, wow, this fabric, it's the same. Like, this, they're these same kind of fabrics. That's what, how incredible. But then when we tested it, we'd say, oh, wait, but you painted that on. This isn't painted on. And you could come over here, like these guys did with that UV light, and you could make the image do all the same things with, like this, with the testing. You could duplicate that part, but then you did it on a piece of linen from today. So no one's been able to do all of that together and pass a test that does everything together. Because again, now you can't find fabric that's that large quantity and that old. That if you could, in theory, you could maybe make something that could pass all the tests, because you'd be able to leave that radiation imprint and you'd have a piece of fabric that old. But yeah, I mean, if you come across a piece of linen weave that's like that, I mean, at this day and age, you're better off doing other things than trying to hope you get it right on the radiation. Because you probably don't have access to full laboratory sciences at high-level institutions. So the common theory is that it is radiation is how this got left. Some of the big things, and I don't know if I have a photo that's good enough to see it, but in the In the negatives, yeah, you're not really going to be able to see it. Maybe. If you can make it out about right here. Those are teeth. And teeth don't show up in pictures unless if it's an x-ray, right? Like, that's just, that's what x-rays do. They show the bone like that. And so the idea would kind of be that there is coming outwards, because that's how the picture would be left, coming outwards, that there is... like radiation level light, like we said, like this UV radiation level light in a intense flash burst that essentially leaves an x-ray on this thing. And an x-ray is essentially a negative image by using radiation level lighting. And so that's where people are generally at of how could this thing possibly have been made without affecting more than just that very top layer of fabric, and how could this thing have been made to where when you take a picture in the negative, it reveals like that? How does it have this density in it? Again, the only way that it really makes sense that they've concluded to is radiation, essentially, that this intense burst of light that comes out of the body and leaves the image. And it would account for why all of the image, even where it's not in contact with the cloth, is able to leave its image, because it's light coming out and up and forward.
So the resurrection?
That would be the... If you're saying it's Jesus, yes, that would be what you're purporting. But you could put lights inside of a dead body and take a picture. So just to be fair and scientific, all we're saying is that light coming out from the body in a hot blast wouldn't leave this image. That's
when conception happens. Isn't there a flash of light also like that?
What's that?
When conception happens, when the egg is fertilized, oh, isn't there like a brief flash just like that that happens? I think I read an article about
very that. I'm not saying yes or no. I just a shrug is my best answer I can give there. I do not know. That would be interesting though, and but to your point, yes, if this was to be Jesus, it would make a whole lot of sense that the light of the world would, yeah. So just think about a couple criticisms here. Yeah, we ran a little long, but whatever. I think these are probably the three best arguments. you know, I think they're somewhat valid with each of these. So the first being that it does only show up in the official. We know it's this one piece of fabric continuously. It shows up about the exact same time that the carbon dating says. I think there's plenty of reason to question the carbon 14 dating, but that is a fair criticism. I think that exactly when we can start tracking it for sure is exactly when the first testing says this is how old it would be. And that also is about when, and partly because that's just about when the art that we have starts just existing, period. But that's also when the art really heavily picks up. That's just when art really heavily picks up for the church in general, but also on the images getting even more concise to just one singular look. I think the second reasonable argument would be if the C14 is wrong, why not just do another test? Why not, if we're real confident that, you know, hey, church, if you're real confident that this is a relic, then let's do another little test. What's one more little centimeter by centimeter square off the edges of it? I don't think that that means that it has to be fake, but I think it's a fair criticism. And then we kind of talked about it, but that X-ray dating that they've done isn't exact. So while it's nice to see that it did come back and say first or second century. Equally, like we said, there's other factors that it could be exposed to. And while we know that it's pretty reasonable that it may not be 700 years old because we know how it's been held, let's say the thing came about in the 500s and that we don't really know what factors were like between 500 to 1300. And so let's just say in that time that its environmental factors were really poor and it was kept in a bad spot and it did age it way faster and it added an extra couple hundred years of aging to it. That's way more reasonable than saying it added 1300 years of aging to it. It's actually when we know when it was being held in a place where it's not going to age hardly at all. So again, I think that's a somewhat reasonable pushback just as far as to saying that this is not what it's being purported. But I don't think any of those arguments are ironclad arguments against. So, I personally, I don't feel like 100% certain about it. I think there are enough reasonable arguments to say that, like, yeah, I wouldn't die on this hill. But gosh, I'd convict the case in court. It sure seems to me that, there's a lot of reason to believe it, that it is. However, that being said, I also don't think that it, whether it's real or not, it shouldn't impact, our faith in a negative sense at all. If you believe that this is real and you've examined the evidence and you really feel strongly like, gosh, this is a physical thing that attributes back to the things that we're reading in scripture and I think that some of these things that are coming about recently with some of the more recent testing, even more so, point not just to the veracity of the veracity and the historicity of the Gospels as history and first person accounts, but I also think it just speaks to the beliefs that we hold about Jesus. And that's great. Like, let it encourage you. But I don't think if it was proven without a doubt to be false, I don't think that should discourage us either. So what? Somebody made a fake of a thing and they faked a bunch of people. Congratulations. I mean, that at the end of the day, it shouldn't be a something that bears on us negatively. It can either be something that I think we just hold out there and say, oh, neat, and it carries no weight for us at all, or let it be an encouragement if it's an encouragement. But let's not be burdened by it. It is definitely not the reaction we should have. Because I can go make a fake of something, and if I can convince somebody of it, then that doesn't make God any more or less real. It just means I made a fake of something and I was a good liar to somebody else. That doesn't impact the truth of the gospel. So let's certainly not let it be that kind of thing. But yeah, I am pretty relatively convinced that it is. I think the tradition that runs back to really the beginning of the end of the persecution of the church makes sense. I think that the testing that's been done either points to people having to say, we just don't know, or it points to it aligns with what would be true. And I think that the images, like having the consistent images that consistently grow together and having some of the things that would be distinct to, oh, we have seen this shroud or this cloth and like the triangle or the lines that are like obviously creases, we can now know is obviously creases in the fold, but then why is it on this image? Oh, well, because you saw the thing being paraded around last Easter, and so you drew the image that you believed was this true image. I think that that's very convincing. The points of argument, like the points of comparisons, are an incredibly large number to be just mere coincidental. And I think that the second rag that we have that is also has a tremendous tradition around it as far as it being real, the science, it being the same blood type, the blood aligning with what would be coming from the face at that point if it is Jesus going through the crucifixion. I mean, essentially what we're saying is this is, in my mind, is it is actually the burial cloth of Jesus, or somebody in basically the exact same time frame as him died in basically the exact same way and was buried in basically the exact same way, and somehow also radiation caused this image to happen. So yeah, again, I guess I don't feel like it's 10 out of 10, but mark me down for 9 out of 10 and I won't die on the hill, but come on. So do you all want to circle back to any of these things or ask any questions? I will try to answer them as best that I can. The stuff we did today, I just do not hold graduate level degrees in these things. So I can read their tests, but I can only do my best to understand them. So maybe I can't help you as much as I can on the stuff that we were looking at more back here, where, hey, that is what my degree is in, and I know how to answer those questions. So